Good morning. Get my stuff sorted out here real quick. So as we've been taking our trek this summer through the Pentateuch, this week we come to the book of Deuteronomy. And at a couple points, you know, people have kind of made reference to how some of the books of the Pentateuch kind of are boring for us. And I know I've heard people kind of say that about Deuteronomy. And so some of you may be thinking, oh, Deuteronomy, that... Well, maybe that's some people that aren't even here, like, oh, Deuteronomy has to be boring. And for me, Deuteronomy is one of my favorite books in the entire Bible. And I actually think it's one of the most important books, if you can say books are more important than others in the Bible. I think it's one of the most important books in terms of understanding the scope of what's going on in Scripture. And that I think a huge part of why we find it boring is we really don't understand kind of the poignancy of the situation as it's kind of come to bear at this point in time. And so what I want to do this morning is we're going to do something kind of different than things I've done before. And my desire is for you, instead of just kind of knowing more about the book of Deuteronomy, in addition to that, I actually want you to kind of experience the book of Deuteronomy. I want you to get a taste of what it would have been like to be an Israelite listening to this and just kind of to set the scene for you. And so this morning I'm going to kind of walk you through what it would have been like to both be an Israelite and also I think what it would have been like to be from Moses' perspective. And so we're going to walk through kind of some history and lead up to the book, and I just want you to think from those perspectives, and I hope it will make the book come alive for you and get a sense of what it would have been like to actually be there. So it'll be a little different than things we've done before and different than anything I've done, well, except for last service. I guess I've done it once before, at least. But where I'd like to start is I'd like you to imagine that you're a common Israelite, and I want to set the scene for you. You're standing in a very broad valley with large mountains on both sides. The valley runs northwest, and there's a large river that runs down the middle, the Jordan River. And you're on the eastern bank, and it's a very large plain before the mountains start. So the mountains are over here, and on this large plain, you and all the other Israelites are all camped out there. And if you look across the valley kind of slowly slopes down to the Jordan River and then slopes up the other side. And in the distance, it's all desert except for there's one little pocket of palm trees you can see. And there's date palms there, and there's kind of agriculture that surround this little walled city that's over there, and that's the city of Jericho. And so at night, you can see their fires burning, and they can see all your fires burning. And so across this distance, you can see the promised land. And behind Jericho, there's all these mountains, and they extend as far as you can see in either direction. And that's the scene where you are, and it's kind of this deserted desert place, and you're all camped out together. And let's just say, for the sake of it, that your name's Elihu. Okay, so you're Elihu, Eli for short, if that's a little bit easier for you. Your wife is Hephzibah. Maybe we'll go Zeba. You got some kids, you got three sons, two daughters, and you're not there alone. You're actually all gathered together. Your entire family has gathered because there's a reason that you're all there on this particular day. And you look off over to your right, and there's Joash and his family. He's probably your closest friend, and he's also of the tribe of Judah with you. And as you look over at him, it just kind of brings back some memories where you guys have been friends since back in Egypt when you were kids. You were about 9 when you came out of Egypt. So you still remember those days and kind of that vague, like, 9-year-old memory sort of thing. And Joash was one of your friends back then. But recently, you guys have become incredibly tight because you've just fought together in two battles, the battle against King Sihon and King Og. And in that battle, you've learned what it means to fight as soldiers who are fighting with Yahweh, your God, and that he has shown you what it means now to actually fight in that sort of way. And as you imagine what it's going to be like to cross that Jordan River and go into the promised land, everything you can see in front of you, you know that having people like Joash at your side who will fight with you in faith in Yahweh, knowing that that's how victory will come, is something that brings a little bit of comfort to your heart. And as you're sitting there and you're waiting for Moses to come, you know, everyone's been gathered because Moses is supposed to come and talk to the people. And so you're waiting for him to come, and the kids are kind of playing, and the wives are talking, you know, about the latest shopping fashions in Jordan and that sort of stuff over there. And your mind just starts to kind of drift back through history. And you remember back to what it was like to be a 9-year-old in Egypt. And especially you start to remember what your father was like. and you remember that day in Egypt. It stands out in your memory as one of your earliest memories, is that day in Egypt when Moses had showed up and your dad comes home from meeting with the elders and meeting and finding out about this guy, Moses, who says he's come to town to rescue you from your slavery. And your dad is furious. All this is going to do is bring the Egyptians down on us. All it's going to do is just, and he's complaining and griping about everything that is happening. And you remember it distinctly because that was the beginning of just seeing your dad's complaining and griping that just continued on for years. That even when God delivers you in this miraculous way and he takes you through the Red Sea and Moses goes up on the mountain, your dad, Eleazar, was the first one to say, he's not even coming back. He's been up there for so long. Let's make a god like in Egypt. And you remember how your dad was the one that was constantly complaining as you left Mount Sinai and you went up and you came to the southern edge of the Promised Land. You were still such a youth, but you remember so distinctly when those 12 men came back and they had that giant bit of grapes, and everyone just saw it, and they were in awe of just the fruit of this land. And you remember how your dad was one of those that said, we're going to die. You're leading us up there to die, and complained and griped at what became known as the incident, where God said, fine, if you're not going to trust me, if you're going to say no to me when I tell you it's time to go in, you're all going to die. And you remember when Yahweh, through Moses, said to this generation, to your father's generation, you will all die in this wilderness, in this desert, and the generation after you will be the one that rises up. And in the days that came after that, how you watched some of the fathers just sink deeper into their complaining and their bitterness and their anger, and yet you saw a transformation in your dad. And you saw him over those years, those 38 years, he began to transform and to look at you and to say, Eli, listen to me. Don't do what I did. When your generation comes to the edge of the Promised Land, don't say no to Yahweh. Don't say no to him the way that we did. Trust him. Trust him the way that Moses called us to. Trust him the way that Joshua and Caleb did. Trust him and follow him. And you saw the transformation that had happened in your father. And as you remember back, at this point, as you stand there waiting for Moses to come down, it was about a year previously that your father had died. And you remember that on his deathbed, as he looked at you, and he said, Elihu, listen to me. Trust Yahweh. If there's one thing that I've learned because of my sin and my punishment here in the wilderness, it's that I should have trusted him. And I just encourage you, at that moment of your decision, trust him. Trust Yahweh. And as you're thinking through all these thoughts, as you're on the edge of that hope, that hope that your father and all of his generation had failed to enter into, all of a sudden your eyes are caught as you look up, and coming down across the plains there is Moses and Joshua at his side and the other leaders as they've come out of their tents and they're coming down now to address the people. And the murmur starts to start as everyone starts to gather together, because you know, like, we've come all this way. We wandered for years. And the instant the last one died, the Lord now brought us up here. And he's brought us to this place in this valley. And the Promised Land's right there. Like, obviously, Moses is coming to tell us what's next. Moses is coming with Joshua to decide to tell us what's next. And there's that expectation of what is it that he's going to say. You see, for the Israelites, there was a whole buildup for them. They remember back to the promises that were given to Abraham as Abraham had been in that land, and that through the generations it had been passed down, and now they were the ones. They were that generation that was actually going to finally get to inherit the land. And that hope and expectation as they wait to hear from Moses as he comes down. Now I want you to shift with me, and I want you to think of what it was like for Moses. As he walks out of his tent that day, and as he walks down and he sees all the faces, Moses is 120 years old at this point, but he's very full of life, right? He's not having to get wheeled down in, I guess, like a wheel chariot. I don't know. He's full of life and he's strong. And as he's walking down and he's looking over these faces, I can just picture him knowing these families and how that he's familiar with all of them and how he's decided disputes between them. And these ones that he's looking at now aren't the ones that came out of Egypt, right? They've all died. But it's their children and now their children's children. And as he sees Elihu and then he sees Elihu's kids, he remembers Elihu as that 9-year-old, the one who had been the firstborn, and because his father had been obedient, he hadn't died in Egypt. And he had come out and he sees all of them. And as he looks out over them, he knows something that they don't know yet. And that is that these are going to be his last words to them. That after all these years, these are the last things that he's going to get to say to them. And that he knows, I think of it like parents as they send their kids off to college. You know, as parents, you have them all through and you've raised them and you've poured into their lives, and yet they're going off to a place where you know that there are dangers and there are all sorts of things waiting for them that could just chew them up. And that last talk you want to give them right before they head off is where you're trying to say, you know, remember all the stuff that, and you've seen God work and you've seen faith and you've seen that this is the way to do things, and there's just all that. And that's what it was like for Moses, but even more so because he knows that he is never going to get to say another thing to them. He knows he's going to die after just the last thing he gets to say, and that's going to be it for him. And that he knows the dangers that lie in the promised land. He knows all of the things that are there. And in his mind, he just begins to drift back through his own personal history. And for Moses, his youngest memory is also in Egypt. But for Moses, his youngest memory is being raised in Pharaoh's household and coming to realize that I'm not an Egyptian, I'm actually an Israelite, even though I've been raised in all the ways of the Egyptians. And he remembers distinctly that day when he was out and he saw an Egyptian beating an Israelite, and he intervenes and he murders the man. And the fear that overcame him, and he fled to the wilderness. He fled out into the desert, running away out of fear, and that Yahweh met him there. That in a burning bush, he met the sovereign God of the universe who came and said, Moses, you are my man to deliver my people. And he looks and he says, I'm a murderer. I can't even talk. There's nothing. How can it possibly be me? And that Moses just remembers the way that Yahweh was so gracious to him and says, okay, you can have Aaron to help speak for you. And he was gracious to him every step of the way, that he wasn't a man of great strong faith, but that Yahweh had been faithful each step of the way. He remembers at that moment when they got to the Red Sea and he knows Pharaoh's bearing down on them from behind, and he cries out, Yahweh, what now? He says, strike the water with your staff, and it opens up and they cross on dry land. And he remembers over and over how Yahweh had been faithful to them, how he had given them the tablets that Yahweh himself had written with his finger on the tablets, and he brought them down. And as he comes down the mountain, he sees them worshiping this golden calf and the anger and the frustration that came out of him at that moment. And yet how he, because of the greatness of God's name, that he interceded for them. And then God brings them the next step, right? Brings them to that point where they're supposed to enter the promised land. And again, the frustration, again, he has to intercede. And I'm sure for Moses, over those years, he began to just think, why these people? And then there's a moment where the people need water, and Yahweh tells him, speak to this rock and water will come out. And Moses takes his staff, and in anger, he strikes the rock and water comes out. And Yahweh says, no, you don't profane my name in front of the people that way. And Moses, I think at that moment is when he realized, I'm just like the people. I need Yahweh's mercy as much as everyone else. And at this moment, as he comes down to address these people, as he can see the promised land, he can see Jericho in the distance, that as he comes to that moment, in his head, he knows, I don't get to go over there because of my sin. And yet Yahweh has been merciful to bring me to this point, to allow me to lead, that I am a sinful man leading a sinful people, and yet Yahweh has shown us all his mercy. And as he comes to that point, as you're thinking through like what it would be like for Moses to come to that point, what is it that he would share with them? So he stands up in front of them, and with tears in his eyes, he looks at him because he knows this is the last point he's going to address. And he says, Yahweh our God said to us at Horeb, you've stayed long enough on this mountain. And so begins the book of Deuteronomy, where he begins to tell them, this is what you need to hear. This is the last thing that I'm going to tell you before you enter the promised land. Here's the warnings I want to give you. And as you flow through the book of Deuteronomy, you see that Moses, first he tells them, look, remember all of the things that you've done wrong. That seems kind of a weird thing to start with, but he wants them to know, remember your fathers, remember what they did, right? Elihu remembered what his father had done. He wants them to remember because you were weak and yet God was merciful. Yahweh was merciful to you. Remember how they died in the wilderness. Remember all of these things because as you enter in, it's going to be crucial for you to remember what happened in the past. And then he gets to a point early on in the sermon. It's in what's chapter 3 for us where he tells them, Moses looks at him and says, I don't get to go with you. I don't get to go with you because of my sin. And he confesses that before them, and you can just feel the pain. And you know that Moses multiple times entreated Yahweh, please let me go in. And he said, no, you profaned my name in front of everybody. And then as Moses is thinking about it, he just wants to remind them of everything that Yahweh has done in their midst. Remember what Yahweh did here? Remember how he gave us food when we needed it? Remember how when you complained about not having meat, he gave us all those quails? Remember how he did this? Remember how he did this? And he reminds them over and over of the things that he has done. And he tells them what you need to do is you need to fear and love this God. You need to fear him and love him. And he says, and out of that, be careful to obey all that he commands. He says it over and over in his sermon to him, be careful to obey all that he commands. And not only for you to obey it, but he says, I want you to teach it to your kids because otherwise you're going to forget. We know how that works, right? They're going to forget because they didn't see the same things, but teach them to your kids and teach your kids to teach them to their kids. And it needs to pass on generation to generation. Be careful to do it. And then he reminds them that Yahweh alone is God. He says, you're going into a nation, and the greatest danger there is all of these false gods that will try to draw and entice you away. And Moses knows that as they're going into that danger, it's going to be so easy for them to be enticed. And he says, you have to remember that you have been wed, you have been married to a jealous God, because he alone is the sovereign creator, God of the universe. And that he is jealous for you. He is jealous for his relationship with you. And he begins to tell them about the different aspects of the law. He repeats the Ten Commandments to them again. But right after that, he comes to what I believe for him is just the crux of what they need to understand. And he says, hear, O Israel. Hear, O Israel. Listen to what I'm about to say. Yahweh our God, Yahweh is one. Listen to me. Yahweh our God, Yahweh is one. You shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. You see, for Moses, it wasn't about you got to keep all these rules. He wanted them in their heart to love Yahweh their God. That Yahweh had been so merciful and kind to them, and he wants them to remember, like, you've been faithless and he's been faithful through all these years. You should love him. That should be the response. You desperately want them to understand that if you're Moses. You want them to know that that is the heart of what you're supposed to do. And then you go on from there. You say, okay, it's the core is to love this God, but he's a holy God. And so you reiterate so many of the different things of here's what it's like to live in covenant, special relationship with Yahweh. And it's like all these details. And I can just imagine as Moses is going through all these things that the kids are out there, you know, kind of doing this and they're starting to fall asleep and they're playing in the sand and, you know, but Moses, as he's looking out at him, he just knows it's so important for them to grasp this. You know, all these details, these things that tend to bore us, that for Moses, he understood, for them to live as an unholy people in relationship with a holy God, they had to understand this. But for him, the heart of all of it was to love Yahweh, your God, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. As you get towards the end of your message of what you want to tell them, you want them to understand the gravity of what you're conveying to them. And so you talk through, first of all, the blessings of obedience. And you tell them, if you keep these things, if you obey, this is all the wonderful things that are going to happen for you. You're going to prosper in the land. God's going to keep you there, that there are blessings from obedience. But then he says, but the flip side is this. If you disobey God, he's going to bring the opposite of blessing on you. The way he puts it is he's going to bring curses on you. He's going to kick you out of the land. He's going to make things difficult for you. It's going to be hard for you. And he wants them to understand the gravity of the situation of obedience versus disobedience. And then he warns them at the end of that. He says, I see a day coming. I look at you as a generation. I know you're going to go in to possess the land. But I see a day coming where one of the generations after you will have so strayed from Yahweh. They may externally still do all the stuff and say, we love him. But internally, they've become wicked and they don't love him anymore. And he says, there will come a day where Yahweh will take them out of the land. This land that you're going into, there will come a day where he is going to take them out of the land. And I want you to imagine what it would be like to hear that message from Moses. And to hear all of that and to see the tears in his eyes and what it would be like to just begin to feel the weight of the responsibility of going into the promised land. And the excitement and the sense of feeling like, no, we're going to be obedient. But then you hear him saying, but there's a time coming. And you want to do everything to kind of say, no, it's not going to be that way. And yet you know it is going to be that way. You get overwhelmed with so much of what he said. And yet I believe there would be one thing that would echo in your mind, that Moses would have made it clear that the one thing that would echo in your mind is you shall love Yahweh your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. That would have been the heart of his message that echoed in your head. And then as you're listening, here's where Moses would have begun to finish. Here's what you would have heard Moses say. You have seen all that Yahweh did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, all his servants, to his land, the great trials which your eyes saw, the signs and those great wonders. But to this day, Yahweh has not given you a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear. I have led you 40 years in the wilderness, and your clothes have not worn out on you. Your sandals have not worn off your feet. You've not eaten bread. You've not drunk wine or strong drink, so that you may know that I am Yahweh your God. And when you came to this place, Sihon the king of Heshbon and Og the king of Bashan came out against us to battle, but we defeated them. And we took their land, and we gave it for an inheritance to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manassites. Therefore, keep the words of this covenant and do them, that you may prosper in all that you do. You are standing today, all of you, before Yahweh your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders, your officers, the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, the sojourner who is in your camp, from the one who chops your wood to the one who draws your water. You are all standing here today so that you may enter into the sworn covenant of Yahweh your God, which Yahweh your God is making with you today, that he may establish you today as his people, and that he may be your God. As he promised you, and as he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, it is not with you alone that I'm making this sworn covenant, but with whoever is standing here with us today, before Yahweh our God, and with whoever is not even here with us today. You know how we lived in the land of Egypt, how we came through the midst of the nations through which we passed, and you have seen their detestable things, their idols of wood and stone, of silver and gold, which were among them. Beware, beware, lest there be among you a man or a woman or a clan or a tribe whose heart is turning away today from Yahweh our God to go and serve the gods of those nations. Beware, beware, lest there be among you a root bearing poisonous and bitter fruit, one who, when he hears the words of this sworn covenant, blesses himself in his heart, saying, I shall be safe, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart. No, this will lead to the sweeping away of moist and dry alike. Yahweh will not be willing to forgive him, but rather the anger of Yahweh and his jealousy will smoke against that man. And the curses written in this book will settle upon him, and Yahweh will blot out his name from under heaven. And Yahweh will single him out from all the tribes of Israel for calamity in accordance with all the curses of the covenant written in this book of the law. And the next generation, your children who rise up after you, and the foreigner who comes from a far land will say, when they see the afflictions of the land and the sickness with which the Lord has made the land sick. The whole land will be burned with brimstone and salt. Nothing will grow and nothing will be sown. No plant can sprout. An overflow like that of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and wrath. And all the nations will say, why has Yahweh done thus to this land? What caused the heat of his great anger? And the people will say, it is because they abandoned the covenant of Yahweh, the God of their fathers, which he made with them when he brought them out of the land of Egypt. And they instead went and served other gods and worshiped them, gods whom they had not known and whom he had not allotted to them. Therefore, the anger of Yahweh was kindled against this land, bringing upon it all the curses written in this book. And Yahweh uprooted them from their land in anger and fury and great wrath, and cast them into another land as they are this day. The secret things belong to Yahweh our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and our children forever, that we may do all the words of this law. And he looks at them as they're imagining that time in the future when it's going to be like that. And Moses says, and when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I've set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Yahweh your God has driven you, and you return to Yahweh your God, you and your children, and obey his voice in all that I command you today, with all your heart and with all your soul, then Yahweh your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you. He will gather you again from all the peoples where Yahweh your God has scattered you. If the outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there Yahweh your God will gather you. From there he will take you. And Yahweh your God will bring you into the land that your fathers possessed, that you may possess it. And he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. And Yahweh your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, so that you will love Yahweh your God with all your heart and with all your soul, so that you may live. And Yahweh your God will put all these curses on your foes and enemies who persecuted you. And you shall again obey the voice of Yahweh and keep all his commandments that I command you today. Yahweh your God will make you abundantly prosperous in all the work of your hand, in the fruit of your womb, in the fruit of your cattle, and in the fruit of your ground. For Yahweh will again take delight in prospering you as he took delight in your fathers, when you obey the voice of Yahweh your God to keep his commandments and his statutes that are written in this book of the law, when you return to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And Moses at this point knows that for them they're feeling the weight of it. And so he says to him, for this commandment that I command you today is not too hard for you. Neither is it far off. It's not over in heaven that you should say, who will go to heaven and bring it to us that we may hear and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea and bring it to us that we may hear and do it? No, but this word is near to you. It is in your mouth and it is in your heart, so you can do it. See, I have set before you today. See, Moses just getting to the end. He says, look, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of Yahweh your God that I command you today by loving Yahweh your God, by walking in his ways, by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply, and Yahweh your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. But if your heart turns away and you will not hear, but if you are drawn to worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are going over the Jordan to enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life that you and your offspring may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice, and holding fast to him. For he is your life and length of days that you may dwell in the land that Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give to them. And as you're there listening to Moses preach this message, Moses then pauses for a moment and he looks out, and this is what he says. I'm 120 years old today. I am no longer able to go out and come in. Yahweh has said to me, you shall not go over this Jordan River. Yahweh your God himself will go over before you, and he will destroy these nations before you so that you shall dispossess them. And Joshua will go over at your head as Yahweh has spoken. And Yahweh will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. And Yahweh will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is Yahweh your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. And as Moses finishes those words, he walks over to Joshua, who's standing with him, and he tells him to be strong and courageous because he is going to be the one who leads them into the promised land. And then Moses does something that to me is startling. He begins to sing a song. And the words of this song are nothing like the songs that we would typically sing, because basically the point is God cares about you being obedient, and when you're disobedient, he will punish you. And that's the song he sings to them. And as he finishes that, Moses begins to gather the tribes by tribe to bless them. And all of a sudden for you as Elihu watching what's happening here with Moses, it suddenly sinks in for you. This is the last thing I'm going to hear from Moses. After 40 plus years of him leading us through our ups and our downs, and him being gracious and him interceding for us, this 120-year-old man who's still full of life, this is it. This is the end of the road with him. We're not going to have him as our leader anymore. And Joshua is a great man of faith, and you're excited to see that, but it really begins to sink in for you that this one who has led you for so long is not going to be with you anymore. And he comes to your tribe, the tribe of Judah, and he raises his hands and he pronounces a blessing on your tribe, and then he moves on down. And then you see him at the end of it, as he turns and he begins to walk away, and he embraces Joshua for the last time. And then he walks alone up a path to the top of the mountain that overlooks where you're encamped. And you realize that that is the last moment that you are going to see Moses. And what a bittersweet feeling you would have, because on the one hand, the hope and the expectation, right, everything that had been built up for you, we get to go into the promised land. Like, it's finally there for us. It's right there. We can see it. We're waiting to go in. But Moses is not going to be with us. And all of that, the reality of sin and how for your fathers who had all died in the wilderness, the same thing for Moses, that the consequence of their sin kept them out. And yet this hope and expectation for you as a new generation to be able to go in, and the bittersweet nature of that is you're struggling with those feelings. And I can just imagine as Elihu goes back that night to his tent, and he lays outside and he looks up at the stars and he's just looking, he's thinking, what, Yahweh, what is going on? And as he looks at the stars, suddenly it's brought back to him again what God had promised to Abraham. Do you remember that day where Abraham, he said, I don't understand. And he goes out and Yahweh says, look at the stars of the heavens, Abraham. So shall your descendants be. And it was at that moment that Abraham believed Yahweh, and it says it was credited to him as righteousness. And that Elihu looks up at the stars and realizes the promise that was made to Abraham when he had no kids. Look around. Look at the camp all around me. Yahweh has brought it to pass. He's now bringing us into that land that he promised to Abraham. He's actually bringing it. He's accomplished. He's made this huge nation out of this one man, Abraham. And suddenly you would realize that in spite of all of our failures, in spite of who we are, Yahweh has been faithful over and over again. He has been merciful over and over again, and he will always keep his promises. And it's at that moment that even as you realize that Moses is going to be dead, that you can sleep in confidence because you know that Yahweh, who made the promise to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob, is going to fulfill his promise for you. And you drift off to sleep knowing that's where you're headed next. Now, I want you to go back and think what it was like for Moses to finish up that message and to pronounce a blessing on each one of the tribes, and for him to realize this is the last time my beloved people, for all their failures, for all their weaknesses, these are the people that he has loved and he has interceded for and he has cared for, and he's just, He's judge between disputes with them. He's like their father to all of them. And for him to walk away and to embrace Joshua and just look at Joshua and say, be strong and courageous, because he knows what's coming. And then to walk up that hill, but he doesn't walk alone, because Yahweh goes with him. And he climbs that mountain and he gets up to the top of the mountain. And I just want you to picture with me that valley with the river running down the middle of it, and he's standing on top of the mountain as he looks down into the valley, and he can see all of Israel encamped on this side. He can see the Jordan River. He can see Jericho in the distance, that oasis that just stands out in the desert. And then Yahweh shows him all the way from that end to that end that this is the promised land, Moses. They've made it. You've brought them through to the point that I wanted you to bring them to. And in his heart, there's an excitement because he knows they're going in, and yet there's that bittersweet for him as well, because he knows there's coming a time where they're going to fail. And as a result of their failure, they're going to be kicked out of that land. And he just looks forward to a day when Yahweh will bring something new and will restore all of that. And as he looks out over all of it, he realizes he's come to the end of his life, and Moses dies. And that's the book of Deuteronomy. You see, I hope that by painting this picture for you, you're able to see what a poignant moment it is. That in his last words, as the one that has cared for them, he wants to communicate these things. And I want you to recognize that the theme for them was a merciful God that accomplishes his purpose, often in spite of who his people are. That I want you to know that same Yahweh, that same God, is the God who is continuing to work in our lives. And I hope that as you look and you begin to see things through this light, you'll maybe reread the book of Deuteronomy, thinking at it from this perspective, but then read Joshua and Judges and 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings and see how it plays out exactly as Moses had said. That they'll go in and they'll conquer, and yet they'll be enticed, and you can just watch all of it play out, that Deuteronomy is exactly the playing out of all the history, exactly as it was predicted. And that at the end of that, as Israel is taken out of the land, you're left with this expectation that there has to be something new coming. And what Moses talked about in chapter 30 that I read to you, about a time coming when he'll regather, and he'll do something, he'll circumcise your heart, that we know what that comes is the new covenant, that when Yahweh brings this new covenant by sending his son Jesus to come and to fulfill and to redeem and to fix everything, that where they had this problem where the externally they struggled, and he talks about how he'll come and circumcise your hearts. Jesus talks about it as being born again. That there's this radical transformation that can happen on our inside that then enable us to love Yahweh our God with all of our soul, all of our heart, and with all of our might. Right? It's that radical transformation that ultimately comes, and that's where we are this great beneficiaries. And where for Elihu to stand there and look across the Jordan River and to see the promised land, that was their hope and their expectation. For us, we have such a greater hope and expectation, don't we? He says that he is going to remake all of creation. He's going to redeem it, and there will be a new creation, and that we will inherit all of that. That as they were looking to enter the promised land, we look to enter new creation. What an incredible hope and expectation that we have as we look forward. And we can see how he's been merciful and gracious to us throughout our lives. The last thing I want to point out is as I look at Moses at the end of his life, I see a man who, in spite of a lot of failures, died well. And for a lot of us, we haven't necessarily lived well. Abraham didn't live so well. Giving away your wife because you were afraid, not so good. Moses had struggles along the way, right? But for both of them, you see they died well. And when I look at the book of Deuteronomy, part of what it draws me to in my mind is I think, what is it that when, if I know my death was about to come and I was able to gather my loved ones together, what is it that I would want to say to them? And what Moses says to them isn't, I was so great, I did everything right, follow in my footsteps. But instead he says, you guys are a bunch of mess ups. I was a mess up. but we have a merciful God who can lead us through and is powerful enough to change us and make something out of our mess. And that's what I want. At the end of my life, if I could say to my loved ones, I could say, look, if you want to walk in my footsteps, walk in the footsteps of one who is a sinner that needs the gospel every day. And if I could at least say, look, this is what it's like to live in the gospel every day, follow in that, that's what I would want people to see at the end. I guess I'm supposed to stop. Didn't expect it to do that. When you get to the end of your life, isn't that what you want to say? And I look at Moses and his last words and what he says. And when you read the book of Deuteronomy next, read it as the last words of a dying man and ask yourself, what would you want to say? What would you say to your loved ones? What would you say to them, especially if you knew they were headed into circumstances that were dangerous? What is it that you would want to convey to them? Let me pray. Father, I thank you for being a gracious and merciful God, that you never compromise your holiness and your righteousness. And Lord, we see the severity of sin and its consequences. We see it, Lord. We see it in Moses. We see it in the generation before. We see it in our own lives. But Lord, we also see your mercy and your goodness and your grace. And I pray for all of us, Lord, that as we think about how we want to end our lives, that we would think about what it means to die well. Lord, we want to be people that live in light of the gospel every day. We desperately need your Spirit. We desperately need transformation on the inside. So, Lord, please transform us. Allow us to worship and sing praise to you because we love you so much. We want to love you with all of our heart, with all of our soul, and with all of our might. In the name of our great Savior, our King Jesus, we pray. Amen.